I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
In the world, here with a brand new pipe bomb right here on CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews, as I drop a pipe bomb on all of wrestling's past. On this week's episode, I prove that sometimes you just can't get rid of a podcast, as I review Backlash 2000, among some other things. So, yeah, hopefully you caught my whole play on the whole infamous Batman the movie from 1966 line of some days you just can't get rid of a bomb. Well, I'm changing it to some days you just can't get a podcast done, as the past week has proven I had a plan on which podcast to do, and for whatever reason it's like I'm just gonna anticipate and Lily Laggy and Gilly Galley and Giddy Gaddy and whatever that goddamn word is. I know I'm screwing up. Lily Galley and some word around there. I'll get it at some point. Anyhow, main point is I kept pushing everything back. I'm like, oh, I'll do it tomorrow. And then the week went by. So, yeah. As of such, I'm recording this Monday afternoon, which you'll probably hear Monday evening, when this came out. I wanted to have it out weekend around the time WrestleCast came out, because again, I was on this past week's WrestleCast. Had to talk about the creepy stuff that went down last Raw, which is the Raw of, if I look at it, the Raw of April 28th. And as such, last night, Extreme Rules 2014 happened. Oh my god, pay-per-view of the year. I'm not here to review that pay-per-view. I may review that pay-per-view somewhere down the line. This night, we're going to, or this afternoon, as the case may be, we're going to be reviewing Backlash 2000 to finish off the month of April. Because again, I try to keep my pay-per-views in the month that I am usually reviewing. And just to put the point, I am going to have another episode out this week. Me and, of course, my good friend TWK are going to be reviewing ECW Heatwave 1998. So that should be fun. And I'm actually thinking about making it an all-extreme month. I have to give some thought to that. And, check out the next episode to see if we do go with that. But, as it is, Backlash 2000 is today's topic. And, Backlash 2000 is a very interesting pay-per-view for several reasons. It was the first sort of professional wrestling event in the WWE after the so-called brand extension of 2002, you know, where Ric Flair took over Raw and, you know, Vince McMahon had control of SmackDown. You know, the whole brand separation, that's where it really started, which is only about a year ago they really stopped doing it. I mean, they held on to that brand extension for pretty long. You know, you had wrestlers on, you know, this program, and some wrestlers are only on this program. And honestly, I actually liked it. I actually liked the brand extension because I think it gave more opportunity to more wrestlers. Now, whether wrestlers wanted to take that opportunity was a different story. But yeah, I always loved the brand extension, and I think it just made Raw and SmackDown better because it made, to the extent, not only were they competing with the other promotions in America, but they're also competing with themselves, and you have, okay, the wrestlers on this show, you know, want to be better than the wrestlers on that show, even though in their same company. There's a bit of pride that leads to great success, and I thought that did happen. So this was the first pay-per-view after the brand extension happened. It was the fourth event under the Backlash chronology. Backlash, let me just take a real quick look here. Backlash would go all the way to 2009. So, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So, it's the fourth of 11 Backlashes. It's the third consecutive Backlash to be presented by Casserole GTX, which, you know, it, back in the day was a big sponsor of WWE. I haven't seen them sponsor anything in a while. I know they're still around. I know, because I see them on cars. I see them in drift competitions and everything. Interesting enough, this is also the final U.S.-produced pay-per-view to use the WWF name. After this, it would be the WWE, you know, due to the fact that, you know, World Wildlife Foundation owns the rights to WWF, and, you know, it makes sense that, you know, a person can confuse a wrestler with a panda. I will always love that that's their argument in court, is that, oh, but somebody could donate to the, thinking that they're donating to the panda, instead they're donating to wrestlers. Don't you think somebody would make sure they know which WWF they would donating to? But I doubt it was a stupid thing. There is one more important thing to talk about why this pay-per-view is important. This pay-per-view took a place in Kansas City at the Kempler Arena. It is the first WWE pay-per-view to be held at the Kempler Arena in Kansas and in Kansas City since Over the Edge 1999, which is the pay-per-view in which Owen Hart, completing as a Blue Blazer, fell and lost his life. So it was returned to Kansas City, and when you realize that, you realize just how much, you know, the wrestling fans were so glad to actually have a pay-per-view in their town. I think they maybe have had, I don't even think they had Raws in Kansas City. I knew they may have had in the surrounding area, but for the most part, they didn't have a pay-per-view since Over the Edge 1999. So there's a lot of interesting things. A lot, you know, this was right after WrestleMania. And, you know, Backlash is the pay-per-view where either one of two things happen storyline-wise. It's either the start of a storyline or it's the finale of a storyline. Now, that's sort of changed nowadays. You know, for instance, like we see with John Cena and Bray Wyatt. You know, obviously they had their cage match, and that's obviously going to be the, you know, spoiler alert, Bray Wyatt wins. And if you didn't realize that, I'm afraid I got some bad news for you. But, you know, now it isn't so much the finality that Backlash was, but back in the day, Backlash was, to an extent, you know, WrestleMania, you would have that sort of epilogue, that, you know, finale match of a match from WrestleMania, or Backlash would be used to start new storylines. And, you know, we kind of see that here, but really more in the most part, a lot of this Backlash is the start of storyline. Like, you know, WrestleMania that year, was the definitive end for a lot of storylines, and with Backlash, they're sort of starting on the new storylines after WrestleMania that will lead into bigger feuds for the next couple months. So, and the interesting thing with Ric Flair now being a part of, and of course, WrestleMania in 2002, which was WrestleMania 18, featured the return of Hulk Hogan. And of course, the Icon versus Icon match of Hogan and Rock. And this led to the fact that, you know, it would be Hogan versus Triple H in the WWE Undisputed, or is it in this case, the Undisputed WWF Championship. So a lot of interesting things I felt going on with this pay-per-view. So let's give the rundown first before we get into the review proper. WWF presents Backlash 2000. Presented by the brands of Raw, SmackDown, and Castro GTX. This took place on April 21st, 2002, with an attendance of 12,489. The venue is the Kempler Memorial Arena in Kansas City, Missouri. Kansas City Memorial, because Memorial is a state, but yeah, Kansas City, Missouri. Pachamatis strikes again. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into Backlash 2002. So I'm not going to come on it, you know, too much. But it was the Big Show versus Just Incredible and Stevie Richards in a handicap match. Big shock here. The Big Show wins. Poor Just Incredible and Stevie Richards. Alas. We knew thee well. Anyhow, let's move on to our first match of the evening. Our first match featured Tajiri with Tori Wilson in a kimono, just, you know, looking very sexy, even though most of her body was covered, versus the WWE Cruiserweight Champion, Billy Kidman, for the WWE Cruiserweight Championship. Now, I love this match from start to finish. You know, this was the heyday of the Cruiserweight era in the WWE, mind you, and they had a lot of good wrestlers in that division. Billy Kidman, I always felt, was a solid worker. And it really showed in this match. You know, him and Tajiri put on a really, really good match that I felt is really enjoyable. It was a great kickoff to the show. The only annoying thing is sort of they kept going back to Tori Wilson. And, of course, you know, this is King in his heyday. So it's like, the puppies are covered! J.R., the puppies are covered! What am I gonna do? I kept waiting for J.R. to say, like, King, here's the ball! Here's the ball! Go get the ball! I'm sorry, that's horrible of me. But, you know, and mind you, it's a storyline that I would love and that would play out better. Because, It ultimately leads to somewhere down the line, Tori Wilson having enough of Tajiri's shit. And, yeah, stripping on the announce table. Which, if I remember right, Stacey Kleber also did something similar to where she stripped on... No, she stripped on a stage, I think. So one of them stripped on the stage, one stripped on another. I believe it was Tori Wilson who stripped from the kimono on the goddamn announce table. No surprise I remember that. I don't remember anything else that SmackDown, but I remember that. And God, I wish the WWE would put old episodes of SmackDown on TV. Hell, I wish they put old episodes of, put more old episodes in, from 1998 of ECW on the network. Because I want to see kimono stripping. But, you know, I'm getting off topic. The real truth here is a solid match, and it was a great start to the pay-per-view. A lot of great spots. The Tornado DDT by Billy Kidman on Tajiri. And I really liked the ending because you know Tajiri has that spray, and you kept waiting for him to use it. And the way, you know, he did it, where he hit it from the ref, I thought was extremely well done. Tajiri ends up your new WWE Cruiserweight Champion. And, you know, a great solid match to, you know, start off the pay-per-view. Our next match featured Scott Hall with X-Pac, who's wearing a Kane mask, or Kane's mask, I should say. They had, like, beaten up Kane and took in his mask. Versus Bradshaw with Farouk. Now, sort of the storyline behind this is that the APA had been broken up because of the brand extension. I believe Bradshaw was on Raw and Farouk was on SmackDown. But, you know, ended up, you know, with X-Pac trying to continuously interfere in the match, Farouk came down and ended up being in Bradshaw's corner. You know, for these two wrestlers, I thought it was a solid match. You know, Bradshaw is a, you know, sort of one-year... he is multi-dimensional, but JBL as Bradshaw was a sort of one-year wrestler. He was Smash Mouth. He was in your face. You know, when he became JBL, as much as I hate to say this, he became a more well-rounded wrestler and everything. And he always had that ability. It's just, it's the character. Bradshaw is Smash Mouth. Bradshaw is the Acolytes, the APA. You know, it's, you know, I'm going to pound you and then hit you with the clothesline of hell and then go get a beer. and, you know, Scott Hall, you know, I thought Scott Hall, well, maybe not memorable. His run into WWE, at least for these couple of months, was pretty good. You know, he would leave soon after, but, you know, for what it was, he didn't seem like he caused any trouble. And of course, this is the heyday of Scott Hall, obviously doing the horrible things. And, you know, I think we need to give credit where credit is due, and especially seeing him now, how he's come back from that. You know, now he's in the Hall of Fame. Mind you, it says Razor Ramon. I'm sure at some point him and Kevin Nash will be in it, Kevin Nash and Scott Hall, but still, you know, that alone, you know, it has to be getting the props. And for the most part, it was a pretty entertaining match. It wasn't the greatest, but it was entertaining. I was entertained by it, and it fulfilled its purpose of sort of being a match in between two championship matches. That brings us to our next match for the evening, as we have Trish Stratus challenging the WWE Women's Champion Jazz for the WWE Championship. Again, this is a match that, to explain sort of kind of what happens in this match, needs backstory. They had held a, of course, there had been, I believe, a big, like, I think it was either a triple threat or a fatal four-way for the women's title at WrestleMania, which Jazz won. And so there was a number one contendership match for the women's title. I couldn't remember if the week before or the 2 weeks before. Between Molly Holly, who was in her sort of I am the pure woman persona at the time, and Trish Stratus, and Trish Stratus won. Which led to Molly Holly coming down to the ring, cutting a promo, and then attacking Trish Stratus and throwing her back into her, I believe it was either into the stairs or into the barricade, hurting her back. And then Jazz came down and picked her up, and the match started. And you know what? Great match, great back and forth, very entertaining. You know, I watched this match, and I'm like, this is what women's matches used to be. And you know why they were this good? Because women weren't forced to be role models. They were allowed to be characters. And I can't emphasize this enough. I see one of the problems with the discussion that goes on all of, you know, pop culture about female characters in fiction is that they're women. They have to be role models. You know, I mean, Spider-Man is a role model. Yeah, he's a role model, but because of a natural, organic thing that comes from the story, not necessarily exactly what happens in the story. You know, Peter Parker is about great responsibility. You know, with great power comes great responsibility. And as such, I love that motto. And it's an aspiring motto. You know, and while it creates fun story, I don't need every story to be about with great power comes great responsibility. You know, I'm influenced by something that is a part of him, but not by everything he directly does. Why? Because he is a character. And really, at the end of the day, all characters do in pop culture is influence views that you already believe on. You don't believe in something because a character believes in it. You believe in something because you believe in it, and what a character does reinforces that view. And it's sort of the same thing here. You know, the WWE women at this time were sexy and strong. They could get in the ring and they could put on these great matches, perform all these wonderful maneuvers, and then at the same time, the next day, go to a photo shoot, put on an absolutely gorgeous bikini, and look sexy as hell. And in all different types of bikinis. I still have a couple. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I still have a couple of the WWE Divas swimsuit issues. I'm sure they're in some box somewhere, and I'm sure if I wanted to, I could dig them out. That being said, you know, they weren't just in, what, itty-bitty teeny bikinis. They were in shorts. It was like the swimsuit issue of Sports Illustrated. And the main reason this could all happen is that they were allowed to be characters. And people respected that. As such, this is a great match. You know, Jazz and Trish Stratus, I remember having a great rivalry in 2002, and this, no exception, just a wonderful match. Great storytelling by both wrestlers in regards to the attack that happened to Trish Stratus. And of course, Jazz picking up the win because of that back through submission. And mind you, by the way, before I move on, I don't want to anticipate anything that's starting to happen now in the Divas Division, where they're sort of getting back almost to characters, but not quite. You know, last night's women's match is, if that's a sign of things to come, we have a lot of things to look forward to. But yeah, just an excellent match, great championship match. And with that, we move on to, you know, you have an Extreme Rules last night, and you have them at Backlash here. We have a squash match as Brock Lesnar with Paul Heyman. Where have we heard of that before? Fuck me. Faces Jeff Hardy with Lita in a singles match, in which is technically Brock Lesnar's first televised match. I'm trying to look here. Then the notes above. Well, it's not first televised match, but first pay-per-view match. Trying to see if I can find. This was a squash match. It was brutal. Now, Jeff Hardy you know, showed why, one, he was the top superstars at the time, by, you know, definitely making the match interesting and making it not seem like a squash match, but it was a squash match through and through. I mean, the fact that the match got stopped by referee stoppage. Anytime you have a match that is stopped by a referee stoppage, it's a squash most of the time. But I think some of the things that made it interesting and made it not seem like a squash, which is why it was so good, was the fact that Jeff Hardy made it interesting, and also sort of the backstory around it. How, you know, Paul was basically trying to, you know, blackmail Lita and, you know, let's not mince words here, having sex with her. I mean, hell, they had a point where he's stealing her panties. I'm like, this is the great edgy stuff the WWE used to do. And not that it, I know, it makes it sound strange, but what fans miss about the WWE is the fuck everybody attitude that it used to have in regards to doing storylines that made everything interesting. And as such, you allowed people to have these feuds where, you know, everything was, I mean, who will forget Stitsky kicking Lita's, kicking the doll that's supposed to represent Lita's baby that he had unfortunately killed or aborted, or however you want to put it. You know, that's because you had all these interesting storylines, because the WWE was allowed to be a bit edgy. And for the fact of the matter, so I really look at the programming there, and I don't see any different from the programming now. It's just that they had courage to do those type of storylines. Again, maybe we'll see them now, considering what we saw at Extreme Rules, but I'm not going to count on it. But yeah, that led to this match being a lot more interesting than it really should have been, being that it was really a squash match.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I am a terrible geek. I don't watch Doctor Who, I don't care for anime, I've never seen any of the Harry Potter films, much less read the books. I like Star Wars and Star Trek okay, but I've never really ventured far into the extended universes of either property. Hell, I have never even watched a single episode of The Walking Dead. So what do I like?
Comic books.
I have been reading and collecting comic books since 1987, and I have been a fan of superheroes for as long as I can remember. Some would consider this a hobby, but I prefer to look at it as what it truly is, a crippling addiction that I may never recover from. To deal with this borderline personality disorder, I started a podcast in 2007 called
Views from a Long Lost.
Every 2 weeks, or so, depending on real life, I pick a particular series, or issue, or character, or whatever to talk about, and then I talk about them, because that's kind of the point of a podcast. Sometimes I'm alone. Sometimes I have a guest, like my semi-regular co-host, the Irredeemable Shag, or my other semi-regular co-host, Thomas DJ, or with another friend from the podcasting world. The show is located at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com, and from there you can find the iTunes link, the email address, as well as the backlog of episodes.
Views from the Long Box.
A podcast about comics, or a desperate cry for help? You decide. Every other Tuesday, or so, depending on real life. At www.viewsfromthelongbox.com.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters? Or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
To record another new trailer.
Another one?
Yes. You know that we read comics and then talk about comics, because as we've established, talking about comics you've not read is just dumb.
Yeah, and you make me do it every Thursday.
Well, we've moved.
Have we?
Yes, we have outgrown our old location.
I don't feel like I've moved.
And we have now moved to twotruefreaks.com.
What was that again?
twotruefreaks.com. Hey Kids Comics, still every Thursday at twotruefreaks.com.
With that, we then have what I feel is match of the night, as we have Kurt Angle versus Edge in a singles match. Now, this would be the second match in their feud that would end at the very next pay-per-view, which was wasn't Insurrection, Judgment Day. Insurrection took place a couple later, and it was that WWE pay-per-view that's on TV that everybody can see. Or it may end up, and I can't remember. Anyhow, you know, their final of their match would be at Judgment Day. That would be the hair versus hair match. But this is the middle match of that feud that would start, I believe it was like the first day of the brand extension. Edge would face Kurt Angle, and he would get a surprise win. And so that led to them, you know, having a rematch here at Backlash 2000. And, you know, it was a great back-and-forth match, and, you know, this is where Edge was starting to go on his way again. The brand extension had split Edge and Christian up, and so he's going on his way as a singles competitor. And what a great way to showcase it against Kurt Angle. Both these wrestlers, you know, had great chemistry, just a great back and forth contest, a lot of great spots. The Angle hitting the Germans, the triple Germans and everything. Edge is high flying and everything, and just where, you know, the great spot to where, you know, Kurt Angle's gonna hit him with a chair and he misses and hits the rope and it bounces back, hits him, he dropped the chair, and then Edge, and I'm trying to remember what the move is called, but the move where he grabbed your face from behind you, slams you down, and then you're automatically in the pinning predicament. I also really, really loved the finish. The finish was Edge goes for a spear, and literally Kurt Angle punched him in the face, and then hits him with the Angle Slam for the win. It was a great finish, and the match was just great from start to finish. For me, at the very least, a 4.5 star match, if not 5. It was definitely match of the evening for me, and I very much enjoyed it. Now, to a match that was probably my second favorite match of the evening, we have, for the WWE Intercontinental Championship, we have Eddie Guerrero versus Rob Van Dam, the current WWE Intercontinental Champion. This is also the match of the, you know, of the Frog Splashers, as both laid claim to having the best Frog Splash in the game. Of course, Eddie Guerrero with his Frog Splash, and, you know, RVD with the 5-star Frog Splash. Again, a great match. A bit slow, and that's really the one criticism I have it. There's a lot of points where they seem to slow down and they almost lose the momentum, but they never lose it really at any point. It just seems like they lose it at a certain point because they slow down a bit. And it was a good back and forth match. And again, a great ending spot. I believe it was a low blow that the referee doesn't see. Oh, no, it was the title. It wasn't a low blow, it was a title. Eddie Guerrero had, you know, snuck the title in and hit RVD, and it set him up for the Frog Splash, which got him the 1-2-3, and your new WWE Intercontinental Champion is Latino Heat, in what is a really, really good match, and again, another match that is the start of a feud involving a championship. There's a feud with Tajiri and Billy Kidman that started here. There's, of course, the feud between Edge and Kurt Angle. There's a feud between Eddie Guerrero and RVD that started here. I can't believe that this next match is a clusterfuck, but it really is a clusterfuck in my mind. And it's interesting, and it moved the story along. It's just... the next match is a match that got tired at some point. The match I'm talking about is The Undertaker versus Stone Cold Steve Austin in a singles match to determine the number one contender to the undisputed WWF Championship, with Ric Flair as special guest referee. I think there are a lot of people who are angry with this match. A lot of people think the entire match is slow and boring, which I disagree with. It's fun, and it is fast, and it's paced, and it's interesting at certain points. There are a lot of people that complain about the sort of what-the-fuck ending with Ric Flair missing the foot on the ropes. I don't even complain about that, because I understand it from a story standpoint, and it makes sense. And of course, also when you think about the fact that this is, you know, when you think about the wrestlers and Undertaker, they're about to put him on a push, and of course, Stone Cold Steve Austin would be soon after this that he would get fed up and he would go on that, I believe it was a 6 to 8 month hiatus from the WWE, unplanned, that even he says was a poor decision on his standpoint, because, you know, they wanted to have him job the Brock Lesnar. You know. But, yeah. So, what's wrong with... I mean, it's Undertaker versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. It should be a good match. And for the most part, it is. Like I said, there are a lot of places where it's interesting. It's just... Somewhere in the if you break the match into four quarters, somewhere in that third quarter of the match, they somehow lose the pace, and it seems like they're stalling for time. And really, that's what takes the match down. It's like you have Scott Hall and X-Pac come out, and they never get involved. And I would have a problem with it if they got involved somehow, but it's like they never get involved whatsoever, and it makes no sense. Nothing is really happening with them. And it just doesn't make any sense. And it just seems like in that sort of third quarter of that match, they're just stalling for time. And it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. But yeah, I digress. You know what? I did enjoy it. Great entrance by The Undertaker. Again, his motorcycle enters at this time. Stone Cold got a great pop. And one thing I might add is that the crowd through this entire pay-per-view had been really high energy, really excited, and it was just a great crowd throughout the night. And that, I think, made even sort of the bad matches in this pay-per-view, in the case of this one, a lot more tolerable, because you had the crowd who was always into the matches and always cheering. Some good spot. I mean, a lot of fighting on the background, on the outside. I thought they told a great story of Ric Flair sort of out of his element and yet letting them go and everything. There's a great storytelling there. All these the storytelling aspects of this match I thought were spot on and great. It's just, it seemed like for a reason they had to stall and extend the time of the match to much longer than it was. I mean, this is the longest match of the night at 27 minutes and 3 seconds. You know, in regards to what is the second longest, Hulk Hogan versus Triple H, I thought the timing of that match was perfect, but we'll get to that match in a little bit. So it just seems like at some point they were stalling, and it took, I think, a lot of energy out of that match. So it's definitely not one of Undertaker and Steve Austin's best matches. I mean, the storytelling is great, but it's just the pace and the fluid energy wasn't there in that match. With that, let's move on to our next match. We have Maven and Al Snow from Maven from Tough Enough with his teacher Al Snow facing off against Billy and Chuck, the WWE World Tag Team Champions. Of course, coming in on the ring with Rico in a match for the WWE World Tag Team Championship. This was a piss break. So, I hate to say it, because Al Snow was a good wrestler. I thought Maven a bit being green was had a lot of potential, and Maven had a lot of good moments in the WWE for being a very green wrestler. I mean, we'll get to it at some point, but who will ever forget him eliminating The Undertaker? Quite possibly the greatest upset in WWE history. That being said, again, this was a piss break. Billy and Chuck did their thing and everything, but just, for me, this was the worst match of the night. It wasn't interesting at all. It was there to serve as a piss break so that people could go to the bathroom, get their hot dogs, get their popcorn, get whatever, so they wouldn't have to leave their seats for the main event. That's what this match was. For anybody who, decries us always saying, "Well, the Divas match is the piss break," you know what? WWE didn't used to do that. In fact, they still don't do that, because there are a lot of sort of smaller matches and squash matches that are really piss breaks. For instance, now, anytime Rusev comes on, I'm like, piss break! Which I can't say about the Divas matches, but yeah. This was a piss break match. This was the time for the crowd to, get off out of their seats, go to the bathroom, get their hot dogs, refill their soda, and for those of us at home to make something or get a drink or whatever in preparation for, the main event. Because by the time we came back, it was over, as it was It's the fifth shortest. So it's, at time-wise, it's actually in the middle of all of them. Now, I say that being that it's 5 minutes 58 seconds, and then you have two matches that are like 5 minutes and 40 seconds, that being the Brock Lesnar squash match and the Scott Hall Bradshaw match, and then you have the Jazz track that only clocked in about 4.5 minutes. And the shortest match of the evening actually was the Sunday Night Heat squash match. So that really doesn't count. It was a piss break. That's what it was. I mean, it was Maven, or it was Al Snow with his apprentice Maven trying to overcome Billy and Chuck. It didn't make Billy and Chuck really look strong. Billy and Chuck never really looked like a strong champion team. It was one of those tag teams that held the belt because they didn't know who to put it on yet. And that wouldn't change until King of the Ring. Was it King of the Ring that it was either King of the Ring or the Great American Bash, one of the two. It would change when, Hulk Hogan and Edge would challenge for it. But, that's a whole different pay-per-view to review. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, let's get down to our main event of the evening. In our main event, Hollywood Hulk Hogan faces off against The Game, Triple H, the current undisputed WWE champion. Now, of course, at this time, undisputed WWF champion. in a match for the Undisputed WWE Championship. Now, the entrances, oh my, entrances were wonderful. Triple H's entrance was great. Bahoka, I still watch it today. I watched it the other day. You know, him coming down to Voodoo Child still sends goosebumps up my spine. And you know what? I watch it on the WWE Network. Obviously, they didn't play Voodoo Child. They played some, system that they created for... It still has the same effect. Not as good of an effect as if it was Voodoo Child. But, yeah. Still has that same effect. It still sends goosebumps. And the crowd into Hogan coming down and all the lights and everything. And just the pageantry and, the showmanship. Oh, I just appreciate so much. And the crowd was so in for this match. And you know what? I thought it was a good match. Considering that you have Triple H, who was probably around his 30s at this point. Let me try to look that up to see by seeing how old he is. He is 44. So yeah, he would have been 32. So he was around his 30s. Early 30s at this time. Against a man who was pretty much in his late 40s. Who had such a wide age gap. And, a man who... Let's be honest. Hogan couldn't do that much. He was an old school wrestler who never had a great repertoire of maneuvers. And yet, I thought, especially in this run with the WWE, he had a lot of decent matches. You can crack on Hogan for a lot of things. You can crack for the matches he had in TNA. And his time in TNA. Or anything, pretty much anything that he did with TNA. But you know what? In this run with the WWE, I mean, you can even crack his SummerSlam matches with Randy Orton and with, Shawn Michaels. As much as I love that match at SummerSlam with Shawn Michaels, I'll even admit, it's not the best match. And it's very slow and it's a lot of things. And of course, the politics are probably famous about that match already. But I thought this was a very good match. I liked the pace. I thought it was steady. Triple H looked strong. Hulk Hogan looked strong. If there is a criticism about this match, it's the fact that they tried to clusterfuck it. In fact, they did clusterfuck it. Because, they had a good back and forth, and it was a good sort of singles match for the title. Then you had Jericho that came in who attacks Hogan when the referee is down. Because, earlier Jericho had, cut a promo how frustrated he was that he wasn't in the main event. He was the former WWE Undisputed Champion. He should have had the first shot. And he couldn't stand it, especially when he considered he was better than everybody else. Which led to him coming down and attacking. Which didn't work, because Hogan wouldn't accept it. The referee then gets knocked out again, and then down comes The Undertaker. Who basically doesn't want Triple H win. He wants Hulk Hogan to win, obviously, because he thinks Hulk Hogan is an easier opponent to face. Which would turn out to be true. As we would later see. But anyhow, up until those points, I thought the match was really good. The pace was good. Hulk Hogan winning, albeit the clusterfuck aspect. And again, I did like that Hulk Hogan didn't just accept the pin. Undertaker, I believe he chokeslams Triple H. And it tries to draw Hogan to him. Hogan gets up, says, "No, I'm not accepting it that way." Beats up Undertaker, throws him out of the ring, then goes off the ropes and hits the clothesline. And I really did like that. And the reason I like that is it sort of signifies, I'm going to do whatever I need to win the championship, but at least I'm going to try to make some sense of winning on my own. Most doubtfully, he won it because Undertaker hit the chokeslam, but he at least gave some quality, so it felt like he did something to win it on his own, which I really liked about it. And it did make it work, and it was this great moment of, that old great champion coming back for one more time. And it's a great storyline. It's a sort of heartwarming storyline. And I thought it worked very well here. I thought Triple H and Hulk Hogan both looked strong. They told a great story. I mean, it's not like Hulk Hogan would go on some extended run here. It was that one last hurrah, and I thought it was done extremely well. And, you know, when he wins that championship, I'm like back to being that five-year-old boy with the Hulkamania shirt going, Hogan wins! Hogan wins! Hogan wins! Because once you're a Hulkamaniac, you're always a Hulkamaniac. So, overall, you know what? I really did enjoy this pay-per-view. I thought it was a pretty good pay-per-view. Most of the matches are good. There are a few, I wouldn't even call them duds, but, you know, not good matches. I'm trying to think of a better word, but, you know, matches that had flaws in them. You know, Scott Hall and Bradshaw, I'll be entertaining, is a bit slow. Brock Lesnar is a squash match. Billy and Chuck versus Maven Al Snow is a piss break. And at some point, Undertaker and Steve Austin just decided to stall for time for whatever reason. But even with that being said, I found it to be a very enjoyable pay-per-view. You know, and I think there are some very good matches. I think Hogan Triple H, while not the best match of the night, is one of the better matches of the night. It is a pretty good match. You have a great cruiserweight match between Tajiri and Billy Kidman. Which, if I did have to pick a third favorite, that would be my third favorite match of the night. You had a damn good match between Kurt Angle and Edge, which was match of the night. You had the second match of the night, Eddie Guerrero versus RVD. And you have those two sort of both together, which is a great, enjoyable half hour of, you know, wrestling that you get to watch. So overall, I think it's a great pay-per-view. So I give Backlash 2002 a 3.5 out of 5. A very solid pay-per-view. And, you know, very solid follow-up, I think, to WrestleMania 18. So that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. I hope you all enjoyed it. Remember, if you have any comments of any kind, there are several ways you can contact the show. One, you can contact us at our email at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. Just make sure you put in the tagline, it's for CMG's Wrestling Reviews. You can also, you know, leave us a comment on our Facebook page that you can find by going to www.facebook.com and search for the Absolution Network. Search for us, like us, and leave us a comment there. And you can always leave a comment on the website itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Also, remember to check out all the other 132 Productions content. That, of course, includes Tom Prerogative and the Otaku Momentum right here on the Absolution Network. The Shaft Plus podcast with Gene and Chris, which you can find at www.shaftplus.com. And, of course, my Tokyo SOS podcast, which you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. Which is my Godzilla podcast, and of course, my Comic Book Crazy podcasting site, which features CMG's Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and Spectacular Webs. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. Also, make sure you check out all our friends that are on the sidebar of the site. They do great work. Check them out. That, of course, includes Michael Bailey, and Views from the Long Box, Brad Douglas, and the Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Slyker, and the Major Spoilers Podcast, and of course, Scott Gardner, and the 2-2 Freaks Podcast and Network, along with many others. So, that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. Next time we're out, you know, next time out, we are joined by the Troll of Trolls! I almost called him the King of Kings, but I don't dare do that, because I know he's got too big of a head as it is, as Maddie tells me. And I don't need to feed the troll. But the Troll of Trolls, TWK, will certainly be joining us as we get hot. 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 For ECW Heat Wave 1998. So until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CM2. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You run and I have and you run and I eat. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I feed. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, I'm bringing out too negative a diva. I believe, yes, I believe, I said I believe. I'm on two feet, one beat, right down on one knee. I fight with all of my might to get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight unto the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of to the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. And what's this feeling? My love will be falling and ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be hole in a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the layers and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life but your brain moves.